You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
What is up, my friends? Hope you're all out there enjoying your week. We're back again. My name is Sean Oshadi, and this is the MMA Fighting Ranking Show, another big pay-per-view in the books. So, fellas, let's wade through some of this wreckage. We got the whole crew here. As always, my co-captain, the King in the North. He is the Prince of Darkness. He is Alexander K. Lee.
Oh.
Hey, you did it to yourself, my man. Also,
Prince
rest of the gang.
Of light.
Also, the legal eagle himself, Jed Meshew, and your friend and mine, the OG Damon Martin. How we doing, fellas?
I feel like we were just here. It seems like we literally just did this, like, last week.
We kind of did.
So, yay for two pay-per-views in a month, UFC. You're really getting that $75 from me. Just nickel and dime, baby, nickel and dime.
Not nickel and dime the way the pay-per-views charge. It's like $100 bills, $100 bills.
Inflation, though, you know, it's happening, Damon. It's a real thing. This you and your true. Lofty ivory tower don't know about inflation.
Also, I'm a little disappointed we didn't use AK's new nickname. You know, going off the whole enamored Christian Duncan Lee or Christian Leroy Duncan, I was hoping we would just go with AKL as his new nickname and everyone could be freaking out about that.
Oh, man. How did you come up with that? Damon, how did you come up with that? That's crazy.
It was nights and nights spent creatively trying to come up with a nickname, and I thought AKL would just fit. I don't know, something about it.
Do we have to explain this joke? Do we have to explain? I feel like this moment was missed. Do we have to explain this? Did you guys?
If you explain jokes, they're never good.
Did you guys even explain this?
Okay. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Daniel Cormier commentary joke. All right, Daniel Cormier commentary joke. Okay, that's it. That's all I'll say. So if you look
at AKL, the Prince of Darkness, I'm just here for this new persona.
AK, can you just change your middle name to Xavier so you can just be Axel? That'll be kind of cool.
That's too many layers, man. That's too many layers.
I'm down to call you Axel from now on.
Does he feel like an Axel to you?
Yes.
Oh.
Just edgy. The Prince of Darkness? Of course he's an Axel.
I used to love Axel Rose. He used to be my idol when I was growing up.
Is that true?
I feel so old now. There's so many listeners right now are like, who the hell is Axl Rose?
No, you think so? You think so?
Yeah.
No, come on, I think Appetite for Destruction, just everyone sort of knows what that's about.
Still rotating on the Spotify's, I'm sure, with a certain generation, our generation, but
I got to think that 15-year-olds still know what Guns N' Roses is, right? Like, that's not...
I would highly doubt it. I would highly doubt it.
So I'm
still playing.
I wouldn't.
Damn it, AK,
you're saying my
Welcome
GNR
to the Jungle.
Test.
Welcome to the Jungle is still the Bengals theme song, so I hear it 16 times a year at least, 17 times a year at least.
This is why you're the Prince of Darkness, man. You got to start the show making us all feel bad.
I did bring that down pretty hard. I apologize. I just haven't even like mentioned Axl Rose. I used to, like I said, I grew up. I wanted to be like that guy, and now I feel like no one even knows who he is anymore.
God. Thanks, AK.
Well, this is a good start to our ranking show, isn't it?
So, hey, let's jump into it. Let's talk about it, fellas. We said it. UFC 285 and 286, back-to-back, two big pay-per-views in the books. Finally get a chance to catch our breath here for a second. So, as we do, Let's talk about the big division, the welterweights. So we've seen a lot of action over the past few weeks at 170. And so now here's just current lay of the land where things stand. Your new top eight after these last two pay-per-views and a couple other events as well. Leon Edwards, undisputed at the top. All first place votes went to him, all eight of them, even Jed's. And then it goes like this. Usman number two, Hamzat Shamayev number three, Shavkat Rakhmonov vaulting all the way to number four, Gilbert Burns five, Bilal Muhammad six, Colby Covington seven, and then undefeated Bellator champ Miroslav Amosov at eight. Jed, how's that top eight sound to you?
I mean, I might quibble with some of the ordering in there, but pretty good. It's pretty, I think we did well, you know? I can't have everybody doing the same things I'm doing, but I support just about everybody that's in the top eight here. In fact, I'm going to go ahead and say I believe that these are the correct eight fighters to be ranked in this division. Again, the order, maybe one or two spots here or there, but I think that these are the top eight welterweights in the world.
Damon, anything standing out there? Anything too low, too high? How are you feeling?
I still think, and listen, this is not a knock on the guy. I still feel like Shavkat Rakhmonov's a bit high for what he's done. Yes, he did beat Jeff Neal. That is an impressive win. And, you know, but it wasn't an easy fight. It wasn't like he just blew through Jeff Neal. He had some moments in that fight. And then obviously beating Neil Magny is impressive. But I feel like maybe we're jumping the gun a little bit early on him. But I also feel like that's potential versus accomplishments. And we all know I'm kind of like the accomplishment guys here. But that's really the only one. And it's not bad. I don't think it's crazy. Like, I just think it's maybe a bit early to have him jumping over guys like Burns and Bilal. But again, it's a minor quibble.
Fun fact, Damon, because I anticipated this coming up. I've been working on something that I'm not ready to unveil yet, but in the process of a different way to approach rankings,
it's like your third or fourth iteration of this?
Yeah, I've been working on it for a while, but it's not anywhere close to being good yet.
I didn't authorize this.
Yeah, I'm not using it for my ranking, so it's fine. It's going to be used as soon as I get it. This is an off-the-books project.
But
are you sure we have the budget for this? I don't know that we have the budget for this.
In so doing this off-the-books project, I compiled some data that I don't know that we had really considered. When you say that Shavkat being above guys like Gilbert Burns is unacceptable, you know, or like maybe it rubs you the wrong way, do you know how many top 10 wins Gilbert Burns has in the welterweight division? The answer is one, the exact same number as Shavkat Rakhmonov, according to the MMA Fighting Global rankings. Both of them have one top 10 win. Do you know how many other wins they have in the welterweight division? Gilbert Burns has three, Shavkat has four. Actually, when you kind of get down to looking at our rankings, a lot of the top welterweights have not fought other top welterweights. So I'm totally okay with Shavkat being really high because outside of really Usman, not many people have put up a bunch of wins over other people we have ranked. Even Bilal only has a top 10 and a top 15 win per our last like top 15 global rankings or whatever. So it's sneaky how much the top welterweights have not fought each other.
And wait, is this accounting for like where they were ranked when they fought them, or this is just like the current?
This is our current rankings or our previous, the most recent iteration landscape.
Yeah.
It's a weird division, man. It's a real weird division.
But yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like I thought reflexively, like you just think in your mind, like, oh, okay. But I was like, okay, we all make the joke about Colby Covington hasn't beaten anybody worth shit in a long time. And that's totally fair. But then when I got into it, I was like, actually, most of the people have like one top 15-ish win or whatever
reason. This is underselling Gilbert Burns' accomplishments a little bit. I do feel like because Woodley and Maya, those wins, I would just say were probably pre MMA Fighting Global rankings. And I would imagine they were ranked in the top 15, maybe even the top 10 by most outlets by the time those fights were still happening.
So sure, but that's... I mean, yes, by that standard, yes, but also by that standard, Colby Covington, who has those same wins, gets full credence. And
yeah, but at different times. We have to always take into account of when these fights happen. When Gilbert Burns beat Tyron Woodley, we weren't completely sold at that point that Woodley was done. Absolutely. When Colby beat Tyron, we were like, he's got one foot out the door, and this is just going to end badly. And it did end badly. And I think the same thing goes when you look at Gilbert Burns' record, I mean, beating Gunnar Nelson at the time he beat him, that was still a pretty good win. Beating Damian Maia, TKOing him in the first round. He taps out Neil Magny in the first round. Again, I'm just saying, like, at the time, you can say they're not ranked now, but as AK said, like, Damian Maia and Tyron Woodley wins at the time were both really good wins. Stephen Thompson still ranked. Neil Magny, he beat Neil Magny quicker than Shavkat did. So, you know, you want to play scoreboard on that one. He beat him quicker than Shavkat did. So, you know, I'm just saying.
I just want the future welterweight champion to get his respect. You know, you guys are out here being like, ah, it's not as good. No, he's the future champion of this division and should be number two, because that's what he's about to be, number one. In like 4 years, when he finally gets to fight for a belt.
So lose a fight and you turn your back on him like you did poor Alexander Romanov. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
Hey, look. I didn't entirely
turn my back on him until he lost two. The second one was a very, very damning loss, AK. And that's where we had to.
Also,
now I gotta say,
He needs you more than ever now. That's what's so upsetting, is he needs you.
He lost us, not with the loss, but with the body change. Come on. Like, we hopped on the train for the ripped Romanov. We hopped on the train for the good looking good get off the bus Alexander Romanov. I didn't sign up for this looking like a fridge Alexander Romanov. Like, that's not, I'm not here for that.
I thought that
was a good thing.
And just bad. Just an awful performance. And, you know, look, if sometimes you gotta cut people to let them grow. Andre Muniz, we once loved you, Andre.
Really?
Muniz.
Oh boy, yeah. Remorseful.
Yeah, Andre Muniz got cast out quick, man. He got dropped out of there in a hurry.
Number seven going into March, unranked now.
Unranked.
I don't even think he's up. Is he even a Favre? He's a Favre still, right?
I think he's still a Favre. Yeah. I have him maybe at 14 or 15.
I'm wow, like, that's harsh.
Hanging in there.
I do want to bring this conversation back though to the man should be getting his flowers right now, and I want to give him his flowers, because Leon Edwards, gentlemen, at this point, this is no fluke. Like, we have now seen this twice. There is no debate. This is who Leon Edwards is. Back-to-back wins over the second greatest welterweight of all time. He is a locked-in-stone UFC champion forever. There are no asterisks on it. That's who he is. And it got me thinking, because I think lost in a lot of the noise on Saturday that sort of that followed this event was just how far this conversation has come for the man we now call champion. Because it wasn't very long ago that he was getting scoffed at and just laughed off of shows like this or any other shows that we did when his name was brought into the title conversation. 10 fights over 6 years was how long it took for Leon Edwards to get his shot at the belt. And through that entire time, there was not a single second when he wasn't an afterthought or a punchline. There wasn't a second where you wouldn't get laughed out of every comment section on the internet if you suggested anything about Leon being the guy who was going to end this whole Kamaru Usman reign. And it was everybody. It was fans, it was media, it was his fellow fighters. Leon ate shit from every possible direction for so many years. Hell, I remember doing shows with our boy Chuck Mendenhall, and he would consistently call him Leon Scott. Like, not even purposefully. Like, just when we would talk about him, he would call him Leon Scott, and afterwards I'd be like, you did it again. It's just, it was for everyone. This man was an afterthought. I just don't know that there are a lot of narrative turnarounds like this that we have seen just happen overnight. So those, that got me thinking, where does Leon Edwards rank among the great I told you so type of UFC champs who no one really saw coming? I have a list here, but before I even give it out, I want to open the floor to you guys. Like, where would you just instinctively put him on that, you know what, you guys can go F yourself, I told you so type of list?
Well, as a long-time Leon Edwards stan, arguably the leader of the Leon
Get
Edwards
Get out of here with that. No one on the internet has said more poor words about this man than you. Like, it's you, Colby Covington, and then everybody else.
I didn't say anything bad about him. I just spoke the truth.
That's objectively false.
I never called him a bad fighter. I never
You are
once
lucky
called him a
if
bad
I do
fighter.
Not just spend the rest of my night pulling receipts and just pull like a tape right now on the edit of this of all what? The stuff.
I never once called him a bad fighter. I said he was boring and nobody cared about him, and I stand by it. That my biggest complaint was that it was his fault because he sat there not being interesting and being like, give me a title fight. And good for him. He finally got one. And
look at him
dance
now.
Your dance.
Look at
look
him
at
now.
You now. Dance your dance. Just dance on my grave.
We did take like 25 minutes into the show to even mention him, which is probably
that was your fault. Yeah, I was going to mention him first, but you guys took this in a weird direction that I didn't expect.
All right. I'm saying Jed might have a point.
I would.
I have all the points, AK. Thank you.
You have many points. Yes, this is true.
I would own, and to a certain extent, he still hasn't gotten his flowers, but I would say Leon sits slightly behind number two. Number one being Aljamain Sterling after he got DQ'd with the whole Peter Yan thing. That poor guy, my God, the amount of abuse he took after that fight. And then to come back and actually beat Peter Yan and get at least one 10-8 round, which still bugs me to no end to this day he didn't get a 10-8 round. But he beat Peter Yan and actually like solidified himself as champion. I think that one to me still tops it because no one has taken more abuse for a fight that he technically won than poor Aljamain Sterling did after the Peter Yan fight. So I would say he's ranked number one. I'd say Leon's probably number two. And to that point, Aljamain's still taking it because everyone's still throwing excuses about the TJ Dillashaw thing, which is, by the way, not Aljamain Sterling's fault. Again, he didn't throw the illegal knee, and he certainly didn't go into a fight with his shoulder completely effed up and then say, oh, I could have won, I could have won. And then when you lose, everyone's giving you an excuse. No. So Aljamain's still kind of fighting that narrative, but I think he's still number one because if you remember back after that first Yan fight, no one has taken more abuse in this sport than that poor guy.
Ranked as the number two bantamweight behind Peter Yan.
That poor guy took more abuse than anybody.
Also, if he beats Henry Cejudo, you 100% know that people are just gonna be like, eh, Henry hasn't fought in X number of years.
He was washed 3 years off. He's a flyweight.
Are in drafts all across the country.
Yeah. So I think Aljo gets a slight one up on Leon, you know what I mean? I think just because, man, no one was on that poor guy's side after that first Yan fight.
So I went through, like I said, I just looking at the modern era, I wanted to just get a sense of the company that Leon is keeping with this. So Edwards included, to me, I found 17 names that really stood out throughout the modern era.
17.
I was trying to do it as loose as possible, but also sort of keep it within the parameters, right? So we're calling this the Suck It World Sudden Reversal of Narratives All-Stars. Maybe not the catchiest title, but I'm still working on it. I'm just going to list these super fast, and then you tell me how it's hitting you and where Leon falls maybe in that list. UFC champs that just no one saw coming in the moment. And in the moment is important because I think some of these names, in retrospect, we think highly of, much more highly of than we did by the time they were in this opportunity. So in descending order from divisions, here we go. Forrest Griffin, Jan Blachowicz, Glover Teixeira, Jamal Hill, lots of light heavyweights here. Light heavyweight, very bizarre division. Michael Bisping, Matt Serra, Leon Edwards, Rafael Dos Anjos, Charles Oliveira, TJ Dillashaw, Aljamain Sterling, like you said, Damon, post-Yan DQ, Henry Cejudo for the DJ rematch, Brandon Moreno, Holly Holm, Juliana Pena, Alexa Grasso, and then Carla Esparza for the second title reign. So those are the 17. Now that you've heard that, where does it feel like Leon fits?
I don't know. That's tough because like a lot of those don't feel like suck it worlds, you know? Like a lot
because
of
we
those
think of
not
them as champs now, though.
Well, no, but like I don't. Some of them were dismissed. Like people were openly dismissive. But like, what was anyone not in? Was anyone not pulling for Glover Teixeira to get it done? Like we were. I feel like everyone kind of was doing that for
it. I don't know if it's rooting though. I think it's about like people think they had a chance. I think it's more people think they had a chance.
To me, it feels about openly scoffing at the idea of this person winning the title.
See, but that's Glover's an interesting one because Glover, for sure, I don't think anyone counted him out against Jan Blachowicz. Like,
no, but he was counted out before, as a broader career arc of
being counted out.
Yeah,
sure.
That's what I mean.
Yeah.
When he got handled by Corey Anderson on short notice, I don't think anyone was saying Glover's going to come back and become a champion at that
he's
point.
He's never become a UFC champ, right?
Leon's pretty up there, but that's the like. Glover is going to feel a little better than him. Bisping is for sure going to feel a little higher than him in this list. Trying to think who the other ones you said they sort of jumped out. Carla Esparza getting the second title run certainly is up there, but he's in the top quarter of that grouping.
I'd say for me personally, I'd go Aljo because no one's ever received more hate than that poor guy. Bisping number two. Bisping number two, because I've told Bisping personally to his face numerous times that after he lost to Rockhold the first time, I was like, that's it. Because he lost so many number one contender fights. They kept trying to put him in title fights, and he just lost every single time. He'd lose to Chael. He'd lose to whoever. And I was like, dude, it's not going to happen. Like, it's just never going to happen. For him to pull that off on 10 days notice and knock out Rockhold the way he did, that's probably number two. And then I would probably put Leon number three or number four based on that list, I would say, like, just in the narrative of how it happened. Because, yeah, I'd say Bisping's got to be number two, but then I would put probably Leon at three or four, depending on how you want to rank it.
My only
quibble number one.
My only quibble with Aljo is I'm still waiting for the reversal, though. I still feel like the narrative I guess you could say the same thing about Leon too, to be honest. I don't know. I can't speak for the broader fan base if they have. I would hope after Saturday, after UFC 286, that there is like this acknowledgement, like, okay, this is clearly the best like welterweight in the world. This is the number one guy right now. He has earned this. But I don't know. Again, I'm buried under the sea of brain dead culture responses right now, so I don't know. But
what's funny is with Aljo, you can argue he lost it again with the Dillashaw fight because Dillashaw was so injured, but I thought he gained it at least slightly with the second Yan fight. Because even if you thought that was a close fight, you can't say Aljo just got, you know, manhandled, mm-hmm. which is what so many of us, raising my hand here, predicted. So the fact that he came back and actually beat Yan in the second fight, that's where he won it back for me. And then he kind of lost it again through no fault of his own, by the way, that TJ Dillashaw went in there with two bum shoulders and whatever else was wrong with him. So I think he won it and then lost it again.
Yeah, for me, it's tough to put Lee. I don't know if I can put him above Bisping. Bisping is always number one because that's
your reversal. Has to be number one, right?
That's like, your reversal of narratives is like
him and Matt Serra feel like the two.
Matt Serra is the biggest upset, but the problem is there wasn't much of like any conversation at all around Matt Serra. It's not like people are like, that Matt Serra, he's never going to win
UFC
title.
No, if you were on the internet back then, people at the time thought that was hilarious.
Yes, at the time.
No, that he would even get a title shot. Of course, but hold on. I got to talk about this because this to me is, I will always say, will never be topped as the biggest upset of all time. But I'm saying it's not like there was this huge discourse around Matt Serra's career before the Ultimate Fighter Redemption season where the people were like, oh, that Matt Serra, he's never going to, like, there's just no conversation around it, right? It's not a conversation until he gets on the show and he earns the title shot.
Once that fight was booked and it's against Georges St. Pierre, the conversations in the MMA forums online could not have been more obscene in terms of how they viewed Matt.
That's one fight. That's not a career reversal of narrative. That's one fight, right?
I kind of agree with AK on this because the Serra thing, like, because the way he earned the title shot was so bizarre. Like, he won an Ultimate Fighter season. Him and Travis Luter will go down in history as getting title. Like, that was just such a weird thing.
He
didn't even
win. He should have lost to Chris Lytle in the fucking finale. Nobody talks about it. Chris Lytle deserved to win that fight.
But it's a weird one. Like, I agree with AK, though, because it's not like, I mean, everyone counted him out because everyone's like, how'd this guy get a title shot? Yeah. He won the Ultimate Fighter? That was kind of the Serra thing. Like, at that point, like, everyone going into that show, all they talked about was Shoni Carter's back fist knocking out Matt Serra, and they were both on the show together. Like, that's all anyone cared about. So I agree with AK on this. It wasn't like a career narrative that Matt Serra was this, like, you know, underdog. He was never supposed to be there in the first place because he won a freaking reality show to get a title shot.
You know what? That's fair. You sold me. Yeah, you sold me. That's fair.
This being the strongest case because for years he was pushed as like, oh, this is the one. He's the face of British MMA.
He was just overrated. He was overrated.
And people saying he was overrated. Like, the UFC's protecting him. Like, they're giving him win-all matchups. Every time he gets a big fight, he can't win the big one to even get a title shot. He's getting H-bombed. He loses that really tough fight with Chael Sonnen. That probably would have got him a title shot.
Which he should have won. And Chael will tell you that he should have won.
But either way, he just couldn't even get there. And I was definitely one of the people who's like, you know, Bisping, great career. Probably never even going to fight for the title. And then he gets a second Rockhold fight. And you're like, well, Rockhold friggin' demolished him the first time they fought. What are we even doing here? So that is like, the fight itself was a crazy upset. The fact that he even somehow hung around long enough to get a title fight and then defended it. I mean, probably didn't defend it against, you know, one of the top contenders he should have defended against, but does technically have a successful, like, does have a successful title defense on his resume.
almost lost.
Oh, that was a great, and what a great fight that was too.
I mean, that would be that'll be the same narrative if Leon beats up on Dan Henderson Masvidal. So, you know, just throwing that out there.
Sure. Yeah.
What does it say that the only two British champions in UFC history are both very much on this list?
They are.
I've been thinking about that. It's weird. Mm-hmm. I think after listening to your arguments, I think it's Jan Blachowicz is the answer for me.
Yeah, he's up there too. One.
Because outside of like, there was at least a period of Bisping's career where you were like, okay, he's going to fight for the belt. And he's the UFC is clearly invested. He might become the first British UFC champion or whatever. Like that was for at least parts of it. Up until the moment that he kicked Dominic Reyes in the body and Reyes fell over, I don't think more than six people on the planet thought Jan Blachowicz was ever winning a belt, much less fighting for one. It's just boggling.
My slight argument, and I agree with you, Jeb, my slight argument against that is he's only there because Jon Jones left.
Yes, that's a
like
factor.
he didn't get it because he was like the most deserving guy.
And Daniel Cormier. Maybe
Jon Jones didn't want that legendary Polish power. That's why he left. Jon could have stayed in light heavyweight. Yeah. He didn't want the heat.
He ran like Francis from him. Yeah.
He chose to fight Dominic Reyes when Jon was like, fought that dude once, got a robbery decision, not gonna do that anymore. Please, I'd like to take 3 years off. Blachowicz.
I love Jan. I love Jan Blachowicz, but yeah, I mean I can't not mention the like how he got it. Like it's not like he got it because you know he was just the number one guy. He got it because Jon Jones
by being the best guy in the division who actively competed. That's how he got it.
There we go.
Yeah, but again, these are I'm just saying like we're you know ranking like 1 through 5. Like there's the little things that tweak him. You know what I mean? Like
I love it though. I just love that. Like the air must taste so much sweeter. If you're in that position, right? Because you're right. I've heard these arguments now. And to me, it feels like there's five people historically who sort of are on the same level as Leon or in the same discussion. And that would be Jan, Bisping, Aljo, because you're 100% right, Damon. He was the laughing stock of the internet for like a year, unfairly. Juliana Pena, who none of us has mentioned, but that's got to be in there, right? Like, especially because she was talking crazy.
The problem is she then lost the rematch. And so it takes some of it away.
Yeah. But in the moment. Yeah. And then to me, another one we haven't mentioned, which is Carla, because just for her entire career, no one's believed in her. And then it doesn't matter. She won with the worst UFC fight ever.
And we shouldn't have.
She still is 2-0 against Rose, baby.
That one's still, even though the fight was awful, no one was giving Carla. No one gave her a chance to get back to the title, much less actually win it again. You know what I mean? Like, so Carla definitely deserves to be in that conversation.
Carla Esparza is incredible because she's like if Dennis Hallman just happened to fight Matt Hughes for the belt instead of fighting him for like nothing in a smoker in Illinois or whatever. It's like, I just randomly beat this person twice. It's incredible.
I don't know. I just love it. It's such a cool, fun story with Leon. One last thing about welterweight, and we hit on it a tiny, tiny bit, so I don't want to harp on it, but it is worth noting. This division is just so strange to me right now. I was honestly surprised by this when we were doing the math, AK, you and I were talking about this for the website. I mean, first of all, I'm not going to say I was ahead of the curve on this, but I was. But I've been banging the drum for a while now, and it's nice to see everyone catch up. But to see Colby Covington drop from number 4 to number 7 over this ranking cycle for the whole team, that was pretty surprising to me. Obviously, there were two things that happened in there. Yaroslav Amosov and Shavkat Rakhmonov both got big wins, and I think a lot of people bumped them up their lists. But also, AK, explain this one to me. Did Colby just need to get this absurd gift title shot for everyone to finally come around to my side? Like, what just happened here?
Wow. This guy's the number one contender for the welterweight title, and we dropped him in our welterweight rankings. Way to go, Lib Soy Boy, Virgin Media, Virgin Lib Soy Boys. Way to go. You've done it. You got triggered. You got triggered into dropping him in the rankings. Classic. What buzzwords am I forgetting here, guys? What am I forgetting? You're a virgin. Did I say you're a virgin?
Snowflake. You're a snowflake.
Snowflake. I'm sorry. You're a snowflake. You got your trigger. You triggered. You got Trump derangement system syndrome. TDS. TDS.
Somehow this is Joe Biden's fault.
Listen, Hunter Biden. Hey, guys, Google Hunter Biden. Look into it.
His laptop has hacked the rankings.
Where's your Let's Go brand? Come on.
Let's go. I forgot the Let's Go brand. Listen, there's I tried to maintain this as long as I could. I am not a true dyed-in-the-wool Colby Covenant supporter. I'm not on that level, so I apologize to all the hardcore Colby fans out there. I apologize to all the hardcore Colby fans out there. If I let you down with that impression, I'll do better next time. But I don't know. Like we said, Shavkat went up. We have to mention Yaroslav Amosov, Bellator champion. Fantastic comeback fight. I think some people moved him above Colby. I'm a little surprised that was enough to drop him three spots in the consensus rankings, but that is some of it. You're right, Gene. I think some of it, I guess, is backlash. Because again, we updated these the night of and the day after UFC 286. And I do think some of us sort of, I think in a bad way for Colby, it made us kind of take a look at his resume and go like, oh, okay, why did I have him ranked there? And then
is that what you think? That's just it caused a reexamination.
We are not a spiteful people in the media. All right. We are not a spiteful people. We are right down the middle. You know, Shane, we call it right down the middle. And I don't want to accuse any of my fellow panelists of moving him down the rankings just because of their disdain for Dana White's bizarre declaration on Saturday.
I think a lot of it with Colby also comes down to like out of sight, out of mind. Like he was already ranked high, and then you just kind of left him there,
completely disappeared in every capacity.
To credit our fearless leader here, Sheen, you were the one who mentioned it, and then I was like, oh yeah, you're right. And then I actually now have him ranked lower than anybody else on our panel. I have him at number 9 because I just couldn't continue to drop him. Because when you mentioned it, you're like, Colby Covington, when you really think about it, and I was like, all right, let me look at this record. And I was like, you know what? Like, it really isn't great. And then his biggest wins, quote unquote, are two losses to Kamaru Usman. Like, that's his biggest claim to fame, is he gave Kamaru Usman two tough fights. That was like his biggest claim to fame at that point, other than beating a guy in, you know, Tyron Woodley, who had one foot out the door. And, you know, I just, when I started thinking about it, I was like, yeah, you know what? Like, guys who have been active and getting better wins. And, so I dropped him. And listen, if he comes back and wins the title, I'll gladly, you know, rank him higher. I don't know if I put him number one, but,
I have to rank him number one. That seems crazy.
I'm joking. But yeah.
Sort of what Damon is saying, I want on the record, again, for any Covington fans out there. I had him number 5. I dropped him one spot for Shavkat. That's it. Nothing against Colby. Okay. I mean, I'm not a fan of the guy. I've made that pretty vocal, but I'm an impartial ranker. I dropped him one spot because of Shavkat. That's it. He's behind Shavkat. He's behind Gilbert Burns. He's behind Chimaev, who could be exiting our welterweight rankings sooner rather than later, depending what that, once he figures out what the hell weight class he's competing at, and then Usman, Edwards 1 and 2. So I think that's reasonable. I did not move him down for any personal reasons. It was just someone else jumped up above him. I just need to send your brilliant social media screeds to Jed Meshew, Damon Martin, Shaheen Elshadi, and everybody else. All right. I didn't do nothing.
You don't have to. Nobody did it for personal reasons.
Okay.
Everybody did it for the exact same reason. Yaroslav Amosov moved into a top 5 welterweight position, and Shavkat also did it. And Colby did not appear to be a person until Friday morning when he showed up in London. And even Leon Edwards, like, I had no idea until my manager was like, look at this thing that's happening. It's totally reasonable.
Shavkat has a better signature win. Shavkat has a better signature win than Colby Covington. Plain as that.
Well, I don't know. We already pre-litigated how wins matter based on at the time or whatever.
He still does.
I don't know if we...
He still does.
Does he?
Jeff Neal is a better win than anything Colby has.
I don't think that's true.
Unless you go to 2018. If you're going to 2018...
RDA.
Okay.
If 2018. RDA is... If we are talking about like your wins matter based on what they were at the time,
I'm not talking RDA about 5 years definitively ago. I'm talking better. About dudes who have been fighting.
5 years is the gap. Okay. Colby 3 fans, years ago, we still got to leverage that out. 5 years is too much. Okay.
Colby fans, that's
I just got to find the window when wins retire.
I just want people to know it's at Sean Alshadi on Twitter. He's not. You can also just search for Shaheen Alshadi on Twitter. I think that'll bring up his Twitter as well. I'm just
saying, they found me, AK. I have been hearing about it. They have found me. Don't worry about that
column. You wrote a brilliant column Sunday. I'm glad they found you, and I'm glad you guys are having a great conversation, I'm sure, online.
Well, let's move on, fellas, because we have a lot else to hit to today. So I want to jump to the bantamweights, because we saw this in sort of our little pay-per-view break week. Merab Dvalishvili Jumping up to number two now. The two top bantamweights are training partners now, fellas, for us here at MMA Fighting. He, of course, beats Piotr Jan. Tremendous win. Piotr Jan drops to number four. So Aljo number one, Merab number two. My question to you, AK. Does this even matter? This feels to me like this doesn't even matter because this division is fundamentally broken if these two dudes are the top two people.
And that Henry Cejudo is coming back to get a title shot. That's also kind of throwing a whole wrench in this weirdness. It should matter. It does matter. Listen, it sucks that these two guys will never fight each other. This is how, like, we have the clearest view right now of who, well, I'm sure the other guys will mention, I actually didn't have Merab as my number two in my rankings.
Just you wait, buddy.
I've kept O'Malley there at number two. But on our consensus list.
Oh, no, AK. You're right. I just looked at this.
Listen.
I thought that's what you were going to lead with, Shaheen. Because three of us did good things and one of us did bad things.
AK, I changed my question. You have Sean O'Malley number two, Merab number three. Explain yourself.
I'm still mad about the Jose Aldo fight. So this is personal. The Colby Covington stuff wasn't personal.
Okay, I accept this answer now.
I kept it straight down the middle for Colby.
I was going to say, you just went on a rant about impartiality.
No. I was for Colby. For Merab, no, this is personal. How dare you ruin Jose Aldo's final run towards a UFC title shot? It's not Merab's fault. That fight shouldn't have even been booked. But boy, that was very unfortunate that he won a pretty dreadful fight to watch against the legend and robbed us of Aldo and Aljo. But Merab is doing his job. Listen, Merab is right now the best bodyguard in MMA. He's going to take a lot of these tough fights for Aljo. And Aljo, again, has taken tough fights as well. It's not like he's been getting, you know, the leftovers. He's fought great guys. But essentially, a lot of these guys are going to have to go through Merab first, and they're not going to be able to get there. So I don't know. I was also a huge fan of the O'Malley Jan fight, as close as it was. Like, that was one of my fights of the year last year. I actually loved what I saw out of O'Malley in that fight. Again, another fighter I don't care for personally, but man, for me, even if he had lost that fight, and I still to this day think, like, if he had lost, it would have, you know, people would have been so much more. They're like, wow, O'Malley looked amazing. But because he won this controversial decision, bam, damn, people who hated him just, like, hate him like 10 times as much now. So I don't know. Listen, I'm picking Merab over almost anyone, including if he fought Aljo, to be honest. But right now, I'm just giving O'Malley his credit. He's undefeated in the UFC. Oh, he's not undefeated. Sorry, the Marlon Vera loss. He's undefeated outside of that fight.
Wow, buy it into the Kool-Aid.
Yeah. Listen, at least I corrected myself.
Yeah, speaking... Speaking of resumes, I mean, not to, like, diminish Sean O'Malley, but, you know, I mentioned this.
Bring this thunder, Damon.
Yeah, Sean O'Malley does not, outside of Piotr Jan, which was a slightly controversial win. Now, to be fair, I did score for Sean O'Malley, close fight, but I'll give him his flowers on that one. Sean O'Malley does not hold a win over a single fighter who is still on the UFC roster, not ranked. On the roster, not one win on the entire UFC roster. That's bad, okay? And Merab, with his last two wins alone, he beat Jose Aldo, freaking legend, greatest featherweight of all time.
No longer on the UFC roster.
And he dominated Piotr Jan. That wasn't close. It was 50-45. I mean, that was a one-sided fight. Now, that to me is
what I'm hearing is that both Merab and Sean O'Malley don't have wins over anyone not named Piotr Jan who are still on the UFC roster. That's what I'm hearing from the
I just said two wins like that. I mean, that doesn't count for anything else he's done. But is it unfortunate they're not going to fight? Sure. Do I really care? Ultimately, no. Because ultimately, just what we learned with Colby Covington apparently getting a title shot, rankings clearly don't matter to the UFC. So they'll just continue to jump him around and have him fight everyone else. Because Henry Cejudo is coming back for 3 years away. They're jumping him right into a title shot.
So my point is, let's say Aljo beats Henry, right? Because that seems very feasible. Then are we just screwed? Because then it just seems like we're just going to have Merab kind of killing off interesting contenders in a very interesting division. And Aljo just getting the leftovers or vice versa. Well, like, I don't, that to me feels fine. Not great. Well, like, that's not super not ideal.
let me knock that down a little bit, because before the Piotr Jan fight, I know he brought this up, and I know this actually did happen. Before they booked him against Piotr Jan, he was supposed to fight Ricky Simone in a rematch, and they'd offered him one other fight way down in the rankings, because the UFC's already under the impression that he's not going to fight Aljo. So he was already staring down fighting the number 10, number 9, number 11 kind of ranked guys. They got Piotr Jan because they needed a main event, and Piotr Jan's also in a situation where he's not going to be fighting for the title anytime relatively soon, because he already lost to O'Malley and he lost to Sterling. So I would imagine we're going to get Sandhagen and Vera this weekend. The winner of that's going to obviously vault there. I know Corey Sandhagen really wants the O'Malley fight. O'Malley should run the other direction if that is the fight they offer him, because he does not want to get in there with Corey Sandhagen. I think at this point you're looking at, you know, Merab fighting guys like, you know, Song Yadong, and maybe he gets Dominic Cruz, which please God don't do that to Dominic Cruz. Or, you know, guys like that. Like, I don't think they're going to continue to give him the top guys, because they know he's not going to fight for the title. So I don't think that's going to be an issue. I don't think it's going to be as big of an issue because of that, because he's just going to, they're going to give him the lower ranked guys as like quote unquote punishment.
Oh no, this is fine. I also just to put a bow on a thing, based on me looking at it right now, I think the actual, funnily enough, the only win Merab has over a currently employed UFC fighter that isn't Piotr Jan appears to be Cody Stamann.
No, Casey Kenny's still around. He just hasn't fought. Yeah, he hasn't fought in like 14 months or something. Yeah, he's been, I don't know what he's doing.
And he lost like, he hasn't fought since forever ago, yeah, and he's lost his last two.
Technically, Brad Katona is back on the roster because he's on the Ultimate Fighter.
No, he's not. That's hold on. No, hold on.
Is he Brave?
You are technically not. You are not a rostered member of the UFC if you are on the Ultimate Fighter. Technically, that's not.
I'm just saying.
The Ultimate Fighter rule book here at all times, as you guys know, being on the Ultimate Fighter does not mean you're on the UFC.
I'm sorry that I brought this up. We don't need to get into this. Yeah. We've hashed this out way too long. The point that I was originally getting to was this is fine, Shaheen, because it's not going to last for very long. It's not going to last for very long. My guess is it will pin to some extent. I think Rob Font is the most likely next opponent for him, specifically if Rob Font does beat Adrian Yanez, because Merab will fit this nice role of not killing off young contenders, but killing off problematic squatters in the division, like Dominic Cruz, perhaps. Guys who don't really want to get up there anyway, and they're just a little too long, and he can face those guys because he's holding pattern for the next. He's going to fight one more time, and he's going to fight either for the true belt when Aljo vacates, if Aljo's still the champion, or he's going to fight for an interim belt when Henry wins the belt and is refusing to fight anybody that isn't named Alexander Volkanovski. So I think we're fine here. We've had this situation historically, and it's okay. Like, I don't care that they won't fight each other. It's cool that two guys who train together are the best guys in the world. We could have had this more often. I think that there was, had the fights broken out, we could have had this with Islam and Habib, had Habib not, you know, retired early. And I don't think that it's a negative for the thing. And it can create really cool situations where theoretically at the end of this year, Sterling is like, I'm vacating the belt. Here's my training partner, my brother, Merab. He's going to be fighting for this belt, defending us, you know, our legacy together. Yeah. Yeah. So it's fine because we're not here for very long.
You see, now you're speaking my love language, Jed Meshew. You know, cool, my anti-squatter. That's how you get me. Yeah. That's how you bring me in to your argument.
If Rob Font beats Adrian Yanez, he's getting Merab. He's about to get Merabbed real hard. And then Font is no longer in the conversation.
What if Adrian Yanez wins that fight? Then he's the one getting Merabbed.
No, because they're the fun fighters. Adrian Yanez gets to fight the winner of Corey Sandhagen and Chito Vera. It'll be very exciting. And instead, Merab will get Dominic Cruz or just the problem guys, the guys you don't want hanging around there. Just clear out the chaff. That's going to be his job until he gets to fight for the belt. And that's cool. It's a good job to have.
Jed, I'm amazed. I thought you were just going to say this won't be a problem because there's a young man, your number three bantamweight, Umar Nurmagomedov, who's going to clear out either of these MFers in the next year or so.
It's going to take him 7 years to get to the belt because merit doesn't matter. Merit doesn't matter anymore. And Bilal Muhammad can't get a title shot. You think Umar's going to get one?
Umar's
it's going to take a lifetime.
You've sold me on this, though. I will say you've made me feel a lot better about this, and I appreciate you, Jed. Let's move on. I want to hit Muhammad Mahayev real fast because I am really still having nightmares about that knee bar. And this is someone who our team has been quite high on over the past year. There have been some wild predictions flying around the team. 2-division champion, 3-division champion, et cetera, from certain members of the team, this podcast. We're not going to name names. But now here we are. I think Sunday marked 1 year in exactly to this man's UFC career, and we are looking at this. 4-0, 3 submissions. Cody Durden, Charles Johnson, Malcolm Gordon, Jafiel Filo, on Saturday. I'm sure I butchered that name. And here, currently sitting at number 12 on the global flyweight rankings for our website. 4 fights in, Jed. Where are we at with Muhammad Mahayev? Have we changed our projections at all for this man?
We have. He is not a future 2-division champion. He's still pretty likely a future flyweight champion. At the minimum, he's going to fight for the belt. And I still feel some level of confidence that he has a very good shot at getting there. But just realistically, I think you gotta, honestly, it's less about, I mean, it is about the fight. It's also about what he said on the MMA Hour with Ariel Helwani, where he, we all saw him not tap. Unbelievably tough person. Like, I can't describe how
tough. Does not make sense to me.
But then, you know, sometimes people have like Gumby legs or whatever. They've just got a little bit of extra flexion. But that does not appear to be the case. It appears that he hurt himself, but simply didn't tap. And then he goes on Ariel's show and tells him, I am fundamentally opposed to tapping. That is adverse to my principles. And that is enough for me to be like, cool, you're going to have a really short career, because that's just not how professional fist fighting works. Like,
that was that was enough to sway you?
It's simply not. Like, it really isn't. You, for whatever reason he has that, like, that can serve him well in a limited capacity. It certainly served him well Saturday to get that win. But if you are, he's 21 or almost 22, I'm not 100% sure. And he is so clearly focused on becoming the youngest champion in UFC history, which may not happen. I mean, it still could happen, but if you hearing him talk, like, I had a separated AC joint and I still fought this fight. Like, I don't, that is the kind of thing that just doesn't lead to a long-term successful career. Like, he is going to need to speed run this because his body is not going to settle for that. Maybe you can get away with it when you're 21, but you get to 28 and you've been in this game 8 years. I have a lot more questions about his long-term ability. And that's a lot of the projection of his greatness, is that he's so young. And if he develops and builds correctly, he should be with us for a decade. And over a decade, when you're this talented, that's a lot of opportunities, a lot of bites at the apple. I don't have any idea how long he's going to be around if he's just like letting his knee get flamingoed or whatever. It's just a tough ask. So I still think he's going to fight for a belt. I still think he has a decent shot of winning the flyweight title, but I think we can walk back the ideas of this is a future all-time great.
Damon, you've been known to hand out a grade or two. How would you grade the first year from Muhammad Mahayev? Have you had to readjust some expectations here?
Yeah, so I'll mention right now, and this is not a knock on Muhammad Mahayev, by the way, because I like him very much. I do think he's incredibly talented, but I'm the only guy on the entire rankings panel that doesn't have him ranked. I don't have him in the top 15.
Oh.
Because that's, I just spicy, don't think, and it's, yeah, and it's not because he's not good. Going by the Jed Meshew ranking system, I probably have him in the top, you know, 10 or 12, because I think he is that talented. He just hasn't, you know, put together a resume. He's beaten, you know, a debuting guy, a guy who's not nearly top 15, and then another guy who's like not, you know, he may be the consensus best flyweight in Canada, according to the broadcast, but I don't know that beating Malcolm Gordon is quite really the accomplishment you want on your record. So yeah, I mean, I would say grade-wise, I mean, I would say, you know, through 4 fights, has he passed the test? Yeah, but for the expectations we all had for him, outside of that first fight where he just, you know, laid waste to Cody Durden in a minute, you know, he's been a C, B minus level fighter. I mean, because when you look at the level of talent he's facing, not to say Charles Johnson's a bad fighter, but he got him in his debut. Yeah, he beat him. Okay, yeah, he did. You know, was it the greatest performance? No, Malcolm Gordon took him deep. And Malcolm Gordon had him in trouble at moments. And then he won. Credit to him. He got, I mean, Jafiel Filo, or however you pronounce his name, that dude has a knee bar victory on his resume. He should. By every account and measure of the universe, he should have a knee bar submission win over Muhammad Makhachev, and credit to Muhammad, he didn't tap out. But again, these situations keep coming up where it's like, well, yeah, but he won. But, you know, yeah, he won. But I'm still sold that he's going to be a great fighter and he could be a champion. But I'm definitely not sold it's just going to be this rapid rise like we had with Chimaev or Shavkat Rakhmonov. We were all very high on them early. And we're all like, even all, going all the way back to my Rakhmonov diatribe from earlier, like I may not have him ranked highly, but do I think that dude can be champion? 100%. There's no doubt in my mind. If he gets the opportunity, that guy could be champion. Same thing with Khamzat Chimaev. That guy, if he would have stayed at welterweight, and even now at middleweight, I would say that about him. I can't, I believe it, but I'm not 100% sold anymore, because can I just sit here and say he's going to roll through Brandon Moreno? He's going to roll through Pantoja? He's going to roll through, you know, some of these guys at the top of the division? I'm not quite there yet. So yeah, my opinion has changed.
No, I mean, I think I agree with you guys that I wrote this on Sunday or Saturday, I guess. I feel like there's been an interesting sort of readjustment in the way we've talked about this man. And I think that speaks to like the way he entered the UFC with such fervor. I think a lot of us sort of got us sold really quickly of like, oh, this is just the next guy. He's going to speed run to the title, that sort of thing. But I do really enjoy the way that Mick Maynard has, UFC matchmaker Mick Maynard has plotted this out. I think this shows, you know, sometimes the fast road isn't always the best road, because we've seen it. I mean, he hasn't, it's not like he's been Khamzat Chimaevin. That's an interesting
Khamzating. Khamzating is probably the better.
It's not like he's been, that seems dirty. It's not like he's been Khamzating these guys though. Like he's not winning in minutes. He's not getting untouched, right? Like he's winning competitive fights against these lower level flyweights. I think this is a good lesson. This first year is a good lesson to all of us of like, hey man, not everything needs to be fast, right? Like it's okay to be patient. It's okay to take the slow road, especially with kids, like fighters this young. Dude's 21, dude's 22. We were talking about comparing him to Shavkat or Khamzat, both of whom are like late 20s, 30s, right? Like this is just, it's not the same type of story. I think you can very easily ruin somebody by pushing them up the ladder too quickly. So I actually don't mind it. If I gave a grade for this first year, I'd give it A-. Like this, to me, I'm still sold that he is a future champion, but I do hope that the UFC continues this sort of slow road, and we don't need to see him fighting like elite flyweights anytime soon.
If anyone,
you're lucky, because he's not going to be fighting for like a year after Saturday.
I'll never tap. If anyone wants to be my best friend, any of you loyal listeners out there, let's go back to like whatever the earliest episodes we discussed Makhachev. I guarantee you, I was telling everyone else to pump their brakes. The guy is like 21 years old, and made his debut. I'm always telling people to pump the brakes. Sometimes they turn out like Aaron Blanchfield. It's great. They're one fight away from, winning a UFC title. They're number one ranked by Jed Meshew before they even won a UFC title. But sometimes you have cases like Makhachev where it's a young person. You don't know what they're going to be. You don't know what they want to do. I mean, he still sounds like he's about that life. It's not a mentality issue, that's for sure. But
he's calling to fight in the summer, on Monday here on the MMA Hour. He's calling to fight in the summer.
He would fight next week if a spot opened up on San Antonio and he was legally allowed to fight. He would 100% do it. The man does not give a crap. But I think again, when we see so little of someone, especially their other skills outside of like their wrestling, which the best skill to have in MMA, we've seen many people with A+ wrestling go all the way to the top five, win titles, is fine. With a modicum of striking, it happens, it's fine. But flyweight, I think, is a little more well-rounded. I think the lower you go, I think most of us agree, you just need to be more well-rounded, and flyweight's right in there as far as like how diversified your skill set has to be. And we just hadn't seen any of that. And he was just so young. And it's fun. Listen, it's fun to say this person's definitely gonna be a champion. This is gonna be a two division champion. But I hate fun, as people know.
The fun police.
It's a darkness, baby.
I love positivity, but I hate fun. All right. I'm not a fun guy. Okay. This is just that's not how I live my life. That's not how I live my life. So while you guys were all like, you saw the shiny new prospect and they're like, oh, this is so cool. This guy became the youngest UFC champion in history and then became a two division champion by the time before he's even 25 years old. I was just like, settle down. Everyone settle down. Let's watch him fight. Let's watch him fight. And listen,
you just need to listen to AK. You need to listen to
AK. I think there's also, you know, when there's certain prospects or people outside the UFC, and I mean like outside of Bellator, like the major organizations, that when they start building up some buzz, we're all guilty of getting a little enamored with them. And there's not a lot of examples, but like there's certain ones. Like, again, I had talked to and interviewed Muhammad Makhachev, I think after his first pro fight, I had been told about this guy for a while, like how talented he was. He was from Dagestan, raised in England, all these different things. And so I talked to him very early on his career, and then I watched him fight, and he was super talented and really good. And fighting guys in Brave, and Brave's not a bad organization. Like, they're not like some C-level, you know, they have good fighters over there.
Especially
and
he beats some good classes.
And especially for a what is, you know, quote unquote regional promotion. Like, they're not as big as, you know, even like KSW, let's say. Like, they're on that, you know, that second tier of regional promotions. And he was beating good guys and looking great doing it. So I'll be the first to admit, I got a little enamored with him. That's my own, like, it sounds terrible. Like, whenever I see a champion come in from Cage Warriors, I immediately just expect them to be hype, and then come crashing down to earth in a really hard way. I have a real, like, bias, I admit, because Cage Warriors guys always come in. Everyone's like, my God, dude, wait till you see this guy. Wait till you see him. And then, you know, I've rarely been impressed. And this is like the reverse of that, where I'd seen him fight since day one, and I was like, this guy's gonna be the guy. And now, like I said, he may still be one day, but I gotta slow down a little bit on that. I fully admit I'm a little bit guilty on him, because the body of work just wasn't there. I mean, he was like 5-0 coming to UFC. Give the guy some experience. And again, this is the guy who also said Bo Nickel could beat Israel Adesanya right now. So, you know, take that with a grain of salt.
I'm still with you on that one. I am all in on Bo Nickel. Yeah. I'm with you on that one, Damon.
I'm walking it back, Shaheen. All this negativity, F it. Still coming. Gosh. Still ride it till the wheels fall off. You say inexperienced, I say he's like 30-2 or something as an amateur. This man's a future champion. Haters, yeah. One and all. And look at the toughness he showed Saturday.
And AK, just to make sure you back me up on that, just say I'm not backing off my Bo Nickel prediction. I'm just saying, like, I also, you know, have said he's going to be the future with, you know, now what, three
Bo
fights?
Bo Nickel's bum.
I'm all in on Bo Nickel.
We're at the just saying stuff portion of this program.
Let me tell you something about women's bantamweight. Let me tell you something, guys.
Is that the best women's division in the sport?
Let me tell you something.
All right. Well, last thing, and we could just end this quickly. But AK, I know you wanted to do this. There were some unceremonious drops from our rankings this cycle, which made me very sad, all of them. We're going to call this our pour one out segment. I pass this over to you, AK.
This game is, Jed has said many times during this episode, this game, man, it's the margins, man. This gets fickle. And we've had some people that probably a year ago we were bigging up as like, oh, this guy's definitely going to fight for a title in 2023. And now, as of March 2023, they're out of our rankings. So Alexander Romanov, number 13 last month, unranked now. We're pouring out for you, my friend. And Andre Menu's big one. Was, I think, tied for number 7 and is now also unranked. There's still, I'll get to one more big important name. There's still plenty of time, by the way, for both those guys to right the ship and get back into that title picture. I am not counting out Romanov. I am not counting out Andre Muniz, but guys, you got to win fights and you miss out on some of these big opportunities, or you get upset in fights for your major favorite. It's going to hurt you. Real tough. Fighting global ranking. Yeah. And then
real tough day for me and Jed. We were really on those trains.
No. Cause this next train, I was the one trying to kick this track off. Okay. And just be like, go.
Well, you
crash into the sea.
You finally got it. And I think a lot of people will just be more surprised that this young man was even still ranked. Former interim UFC lightweight champion, Tony Ferguson. Was
one of the greatest lightweights of all time. The
greatest ever, hanging on to that number 14 spot in the middle of a 5-fight losing streak. And he is finally out of here. There was some recalibrating of the rankings on my part, and he lost just enough points that he is no longer ranked. So Romanov, Muniz, and Tony Ferguson, we salute you guys.
Can we get a Sarah McLachlan sound drop?
We can't.
Dude, I was 100% gonna be like, where's the sad, somber, like Lenny Kravitz singing from like Day in Memoriam? Like, where's this at?
We don't have the budget for that.
We just got demonetized.
AK, weep not for the memories. I gotta say, as the biggest opponent of having Tony Ferguson ranked, maybe on this show's history, I'm a little sad to see this day, not because I think that there's any, I think this is the just and true outcome, but with the rumors that Kevin Lee may be fighting Tony Ferguson sometime, I was really excited to see the mental gymnastics AK would have to go through when Tony Ferguson lost to Kevin Lee. And so Kevin Lee would somehow become a top 15 lightweight because he beat the guy. He beat the guy.
Obviously, they're going to fight at welterweight. So I would just, if he beat him again, I would just be like, oh, it didn't happen at lightweight. Doesn't affect it. That was easy. Come on.
You're putting a whole lot of faith in Kevin Lee. You know, you're putting a whole lot of faith in Kevin Lee. I'm just saying.
So. That too.
No. I'm putting a lot of faith in how washed Tony Ferguson is.
The one that stings the most, I'm guilty of this too, is Andre Muniz, man. I was super high on him.
The entire MMA fighting team took an L on that one.
He could still be good.
He's number 15. He dropped to number 15. I didn't drop him completely out, but I did drop him all the way to 15.
I think he's done.
Oh, stop.
He's done.
He's young in his career.
What do you think it was about that loss that caused? Because like usually somebody's at 7, they lose, they'll drop to like 10, 11. What do you think it was about that loss that like everyone of us, without speaking to each other, kind of did the same thing?
Brandon Allen got ranked and deservedly so because he's looked good recently. But I think it's not that Brandon Allen is bad. It's that Brandon Allen dominated him. Like it wasn't even a close fight. Like it was,
he was supposed to be good, right?
He submitted him on the ground. Like the one thing that Muniz was supposed to be the best at, he got dominated and finished on the ground. Like, it was like everything that could get exposed in a fighter in one fight got exposed in that one fight.
And then you have to recalibrate because you go back and look and are like, tough scenes on that resume. Uriah Hall.
Jacare.
Eric Anders. Like, maybe we were just feeling ourselves for a minute there.
Yeah, and listen, and for me, I don't have Brendan Allen ranked still. So if I don't have Brendan Allen ranked, I can't have Muniz ranked. So that's it.
That's just because you want to keep him in the conversation for middleweightiest middleweight. That's a bit from you and Mike and Ty.
It's very selfish.
It's where he belongs.
It's just sad days.
Mike does have him ranked now. I was about to be like, this is entirely a bit from y'all, but no.
I'm a little disappointed though that this is like we're just now doing this category with the whole in memoriam thing because there's so many ones I'd like to take a victory dance on for guys that I didn't have ranked or have fallen out.
You're not supposed to these things, Damon. This is a sad day.
I'm just saying,
this feels like it should be a recurring theme. Yeah, like this should be like recurring every episode of who are the new people in, and we can give them happy music, and then we can pour one out for the fall.
Like we didn't get to mention that Darren Till got bounced out of the rankings. I had him dropped out for like 6 months, and he finally got bounced a while back, and then so that was one. Michael Venom Page, we remember that famous episode where I kind of went ham on him.
He'll be back.
He's no longer in the rankings. I'm just saying, like
man, if we had been doing this the episode we finally got rid of Stipe, I'd have been dancing.
I think you did anyway.
I'm pretty sure you did.
I don't think we did
40 victory laps on that anyway.
Damn straight.
Oh wow. Well, that was fun, fellas. I guess we gotta do that more. Anyway. Thanks for joining us, everyone. That's been another episode of the MMA Fighting Ranking Show. It's a fun one. We got two this month. Now we get a little break. I think, 2 weeks now before Izzy
Big
and
break.
Alex.
April 8th already.
Are we calling it Izzy Alex 2 or 4? I call it 2. Yeah, all right. It's a different sport.
They're not the same sport.
Do we count, like, if they competed in obstacle course challenges, we wouldn't, like, count that in the rivalry.
Or should we? Because that would be much more fun.
I mean, I pitched this a long time ago as that would be a lot more fun for a lot of things. Like, give me Yoel Romero just doing obstacle courses left and right.
Yoel Romero would dummy most fighters in random feats of athletic prowess.
But thank you, everyone, for listening. Keep it locked to the MMA Fighting Podcast Network. We got a lot of good stuff coming for y'all in the coming weeks. That man is Damon Martin. That man is Jed Meshew for Alexander K. Lee. I'm Sean Ashadi.
Love y'all.
Vacations can be tricky. You already know how to book flights and hotels, but now the only thing you're missing is, you know, the actual travel experience. Because is it really a vacation if you're just sitting around like you would at home? You need a tool to get the most out of your time away. That's where Viator steps in. You can book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected. And 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. Financial operations are needlessly complex. Startups have to cobble together a patchwork of tools to reconcile transactions from different sources and struggle to glean answers from platforms that speak different languages. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so you can pay bills faster, stay in control of company spending, and speed up reconciliation. Apply in minutes at mercury.com and join over 100,000 ambitious startups that trust Mercury, not just for banking and credit cards, but for the precision, control, and focus they need to transform their financial workflows and perform at their best. Mercury, the art of simplified finances. Apply in minutes at mercury.com. Mercury is a financial technology company, not a bank. Banking services provided by Choice Financial Group and Evolve Bank and Trust. Members FDIC.
Listen, I'm 24 and I still live at home. Like, what? For sure. Are you kidding me? My man and I, we attempted to move out.
Yeah, that'll be $1,600 for a studio apartment, not including groceries.
Last fall, the National Association of Realtors released data showing that housing affordability had fallen to its lowest point since the 1980s for reasons of economy, American.
There just aren't a lot of home sales going on. And there's really kind of a standoff right now between buyers and sellers.
That standoff leads to another kind of standoff.
It was always fun being 40-something years old and having to live with your parents again. And I know it's all my fault.
Sir, I don't know your life, but on Today Explained, a two-part series on how it might not be your fault. Our housing reality bites and the American dream is in your childhood bedroom. Series sponsored by Mint Mobile. Today Explained, in your feed every weekday.
And I'll tell my mom, Mom, I'm going to the bathroom, I'll be back. If I'm not out in like 3 minutes, dog, she's like knocking on the door going, everything okay in there? Yeah, Mom, everything's cool, dog.
Support for this show comes from Mercury. There's an art to making the complex feel simple. Everything should be in sync so that even the smallest part serves a bigger purpose. Simplicity can transform your business operations. That's why Mercury powers your financial workflows from the bank account, so ambitious companies have the precision, control, and focus they need to perform at their best. Apply in minutes at mercury.com.